Alright, creatures of the night, welcome to episode 102 of Talking Taker, our encyclopedic exploration digging up the career of the greatest professional wrestling character of autism. My name is Alex Dorio, and I want to thank you for joining us for yet another round of Dead Man Talking. And I am joined, as always, by my tag team partner, my wrestling buddy, the Crypt Keeper himself, Mr. Travis White. And Travis, you know, we've been having a lot of fun here over these 102 episodes. We've got a nice, strong, loyal audience of Creatures of the Night out there, of Taker talkers and Undertaker fans. But I think our numbers are really going to spike this week, bro, because we are going all in on this big true crime genre that Podcast World is exploding all about, because we're talking about the live on-screen television murder of Paul Bearer.
Yeah, we are, man. We can call this Serial Taker. So, yeah, and go with the old serial of the murder mystery stuff. Man, this is crazy. This build-up is nuts. You know what? I just hope that we do it justice and that we do the right thing.
By
the time we finish this. You a big fan of Spike Lee films?
Apparently Paul Heyman was.
Yeah. Oh, that'll make sense in a few minutes, ladies and gentlemen. But
will it?
Sure you
will it
do
make
the
sense?
Right thing.
No, I'm not sure of that.
Listen to this podcast. Oh, none of this makes sense.
Oh, well, folks, we are, of course, talking about none other than the great, great, in quotation marks, American Bash 2004. The Undertaker versus the Dudley Boys in a live free or die concrete crypt handicap match. My goodness, that's a real thing, and it's, oh, I feel like we've been dreading this one on the calendar since day one of this podcast, folks. I mean, we've been through the rough times of Giant Gonzalez, of Kamala, of
A-Train.
Mabel, of A-Train, folks, but perhaps this night may be darker than all of them, because amongst all the crappiness, we gotta say goodbye to Paul Bearer.
That's true, I know. That's the worst part of it all. But he'll rear his little head in, 2013? For just a minute, I guess?
In 2010.
Or 10,
briefly,
2010,
too.
Yeah. Actually, so.
Yeah, that's a long way to go, man. And
after I watched this match, I wanted to get inside a glass crypt and bury myself in concrete. Ask you to pull the lever.
I'll pull the lever, dude.
Yeah.
Bury you in the gray oatmeal. But until we get there, let's just go ahead and gas up this time traveling hearse, man, and take it on back to 2004, May 20th, 2004, to be exact, is where we're going to pick up tonight, coming the week of, or the Thursday after Judgment Day 2004. The Undertaker looking dominant in his first big singles match after returning as the Dead Man and getting a big win over Booker T and laying his voodoo to rest. But there's still going to be a few threads to finish tying up here with Booker T in these next few weeks before we really dive into the meat of things with the Dudley Boys. So, Travis, why don't you get us started with SmackDown episode 248?
All right, man. I'm going to do the right thing here and go to, like I said, SmackDown 248, May 20th. Thank God we got a big return here on SmackDown. We got SmackDown's number one announcer, Funaki, back from Velocity, I guess. And he's interviewing Booker T. And, of course, Booker T blames his Funaki asks Booker if he's afraid of the Undertaker from what happened at the pay-per-view. And he says, "Tell me you didn't just say that." And Funaki says, Booker T. I'm getting all tongue-tied here because I can't do the right thing. Booker T says that Taker cheated at the pay-per-view, and he thinks that Paul Bearer switched the old magic voodoo velvet pouch when he wasn't looking.
Oh, the old magic voodoo pouch switch.
Yeah.
The oldest trick in the book.
Yeah. So he thinks that Paul Bearer switched it, and which means Paul Bearer carries one around with him, I guess. So, anyway. But Booker says he wants to fight Taker tonight, but of course he's not here. He's got the night off. And again, just that's how he does it.
Of course he does.
Yeah. But he said he's going to be given any match that he wants tonight, so Booker T chooses Funaki. And Funaki, in a moment of hilarity, says,
"Tell me you didn't just say that."
It was great. So, which pops Booker T with a microphone, and then Booker walks off. And so they have the match. Obviously, Booker T wins, beats the crap out of him. And leads him with a scissor kick, and the crowd's chanting Undertaker throughout the match. But that's about all for Undertaker stuff from that night. So,
you know, I really, thinking back over last week, I think the problem was not with Booker T last week finding the wrong grave. I'm pretty convinced now that Mama Sangre was not all she said she was. I think she was just swindling Booker T.
Could have been.
Yeah. And she pulled a rib on him, and that's why he ended up losing. No real that's voodoo possible. There.
Possible.
Well, someone's going to pull a rib on Paul Bearer here on SmackDown episode 249, May 27th, 2004. And we're not talking about the ribs that Paul Bearer ate at catering on that one Sunday Night Heat. Where he's just the happiest we've ever seen him.
Oh, my favorite the Paul Bearer. Jeans shirt on. Beagle Boy shirt. So good.
Well, this is the night where Paul Heyman, he's going to connect with the Dudley Boys on this night. They're facing RVD and Rey Mysterio, or a really underrated tag team from this era. But Heyman jump over the rail and interfere, help the Dudley Boys win the match. And later on in the night, they're celebrating backstage, and Paul is going to give him one of his classic Paul Heyman ECW motivational speeches. Basically getting him to drink the Kool-Aid, telling them that they're the greatest tag team of all time, but they're still not in the main event despite all of their successes. JBL gets the main event instead of them, which that would piss me off too.
Yeah, exactly. I'd light a fire under my butt.
And then Heyman encourages them to make an impact tonight, or else someone else is going to make an impact on them. So pay attention to that. Remember that, folks. Later on, Booker T defeats Scotty Too Hotty. He's just rolling through the cruiserweights here week after week. And he again calls out The Undertaker for a rematch next week on SmackDown and says it's going to be different than Judgment Day because he is not afraid tonight. Then, of course, you can imagine lights go out. The gong, quote-unquote, as we talked about last week, hits, which I will say Randy Turco brought up a good point that you know, the gong, when people refer to it, probably people are just referring to the sound effect itself. Yeah. And, you know, you might not want to use another word for that sound effect when referring to Undertaker. You might want to not call it the dong hits when Undertaker comes out, which I said, I think that would make Undertaker the King of Dong Style, you know, original Joey Ryan. Yeah.
Well, can you call me the King of Gong Style?
Dude. That's our next shirt.
Oh, Gongo Style.
King of Gong Style. That's there the next shirt, man. There it is. Look for it soon. Oh. TeePublic.com. But anyway, I will still stand by my point that...
Yes, absolutely.
It's a bell. It's not a gong. I think that's been lost in translation through the years. But anywho, lightning strikes the ring and blah, blah, blah. Booker says, all right, this is a little scary, but it's going to take more than lightning and noise to beat me, and next week he's going to shock the world, sucker. But it's truly the Dudley Boys who shocked the world tonight, because later on we cut to the parking lot, we see the Dudley Boys jamming someone into the trunk of their car, and they slam the lid and say, last ride, Paul, and get in the car to drive away. So the announcers, Cole and Taz, are assuming that they're referring to Paul Heyman because Paul Heyman was kind of being a jerk to him early in the night. He, like, slapped Devon around and told him to make an impact. So they thought, oh, well, they're turning on Paul Heyman and finally getting revenge on him after all these years of not getting paychecks in ECW or something. But as the car drives away, the camera zooms in on something that was hidden behind the car, an urn in the distance in the parking lot. And then Paul Heyman walks by it, picks up the urn, and smiles. Oh my, I think Paul Bearer is in trouble, Travis.
I think he is. He's gone for the oldest trick in the book and stolen the urn, which never ends well for whomever takes it. So we'll see.
But no one's ever stolen Paul Bearer.
Oh, that's true. No one's ever stolen Paul Bearer. You're right. So this would be a first, I guess. We're trying to add a new wrinkle to the story here. I guess the old trope of stealing the urn is maybe played out. But, yeah, instead of stealing that, we'll steal Paul Bearer. So.
Although Stone Cold and Kane did throw him down a sewer one time.
In a manhole, yes. know, so, well, that brings us to SmackDown 250 on June 3rd, 2004. And Booker T opens up the show and says he doesn't have to justify himself to the Undertaker or to the people. He states that he's got nothing to do with Paul Bearer's abduction last week. He says nothing's going to stop him from beating Taker tonight. And he thinks that the Undertaker was actually the one that had the Dudley snatch Paul Bearer, so he'd have an excuse not to show up again. So he's noticing a pattern of absence, you know, absenteeism by the Undertaker. So
true.
Yeah, blaming him. But anyway, and he says that Taker's powers won't make any difference tonight. And he goes to finish his promo, you know, and in only Booker T style, but he's interrupted by John Cena, who comes out and makes literally 5 minutes of poop jokes.
This is so bad.
It's really bad. It's definitely the opposite of good television. It's awful, man.
This was like all the edge that Cena had in 2003, complete opposite of that.
Yeah.
Like kids' silliness jokes. Like it's like, it was embarrassing.
Yeah, the less said, the better.
Yeah, okay.
It's awful, man. It is so, so awful. But. Well, Booker T versus Taker is the main event, and dude, I just can't. I want to highlight how pumped the crowd is to Taker. I don't think it's piped in stuff. Like, I think it's legit because legit, you know, reaction from the crowd. So, but he gets that double pop like old times, you know, first for the old gong dong bell, and then second for his actual appearance. So, but for the first time since he's returned to Mania, he's coming out without Paul Bearer. So that's strange.
It's strange, yeah, weird sight to see.
But Michael Cole, the idiot that he is, says that Taker has dominated the WWE for 12 years. So, not counting his first 2 years, apparently. So.
I think he's factoring in all the time he's taken off.
Oh, well, pardon me, the HR representative Michael Cole. based on time served, time actually in the ring, it's only been 12 years, even though he's been here for 14. So.
That's right.
My apologies, Michael Cole. But one cool thing, though, is that commentary is really putting over the power of the urn and the hold it has over Taker and going back to that old school stuff, you know. But they're wondering, you know, how is Taker going to react when Paul Bearer's missing? What's happening, you know, to Paul Bearer? What's going on with him? In a moment of basically flipping the script, Booker T actually jumps Taker before the match. We used to see that all the time.
Yeah.
Taker would just rush into the aisleway and beat people up, but. As he's taking his hat off, Booker jumps him and just immediately goes for a knee. Really cool and really similar to the pay-per-view match, but honestly, I liked it better because there was no voodoo pouch mucking up the scenery, you know? So, I don't know. But I want to mention one thing real quick, though, too, is that Taker takes this disgusting bump, man. He's going for old school, and Booker knocks him off the top rope, but instead of, like, crotching himself like he's supposed to, he just flops back onto the apron and then falls all the way down to the floor after that. It looked ugly. I'm sure Booker got a talking to backstage after that.
He might have.
It looked really, for a guy who's 6'10 or whatever he is, you know, for a shoot, I don't know, 6'8, whatever, but it's a big fall, big long fall for him. So it was nasty. But anyway, basically, Taker's winning the match here. He's going to go hit the last ride and choke slam and goes for the throat slash. And suddenly, Paul Heyman comes to the mic. He's like, whoa, 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 whoa.
That was not an exaggeration.
No, yeah, that's about how many times it is. He says that Taker should be concerned with what's going on with Paul Bearer and says that stay put right there because I'm going to come out there and confront you. So Booker T is gone at this point. He's an afterthought. There's just a match to build to a storyline. And Heyman's going over, and he's putting over the Dudley boys. And he's in the ring with Taker, and Taker's going to grab him by the throat, goozle him in the middle of the ring. And then, you know, he's about to do some damage to Paul Heyman here. And then the Dudleys come on the Tron, and they start saying, you know, you better listen to Heyman if you ever want to see Paul Bearer again. So who they apparently have trapped in the closet. Cue R. Kelly music. So.
No. He's canceled.
No. He's out of it. But anyway, trapped in the closet, and Devon's holding the urn there, and Taker's hesitating to loosen his grip. You know, he really wants to put it to Heyman, but eventually he does, and the crowd starts booing, you know, because they want to see Heyman get his comeuppance. But, you know, there's a power over Undertaker. He doesn't want to hurt him because he does want to see Paul Bearer again. So. Heyman gives Taker a week to decide the fate of Paul Bearer. He says, join me, Undertaker. Join us.
Join me!
What?
Join me, Undertaker! Join us! Even in your cold, dark heart, you have to know that with you and the Dudleys and me together, we'd be unstoppable.
Kind of like Empire Strikes Back stuff, you know?
Oh,
join
okay.
me on the dark side.
And, there you go.
You know, and so, anyway, he says that with Taker and the Dudleys, they'd be unstoppable. And if Taker doesn't join them, he'll never, ever see Paul Bearer again. And he says that now, you know, instead of you having me in a chokehold, I've got you by the throat. So, yep.
Dude, this is ridiculous, but God bless Paul Heyman, man, because
yeah.
I think we've talked about Paul Bearer deserving an Emmy before with some of his performances. Give one to Paul Heyman because he is taking some hot garbage here. But he is performing the heck out of it. And you, like you said, the crowd is reacting to it because he's doing it with gusto. Man, it's everything we said Booker T was not doing last week. Paul Heyman is just like, it is what it is. So I'm going to go out there and I'm going to be Paul Heyman with it. And I'm gonna get this stuff over. And it's...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he's doing an incredible job.
He really is. He really is. He's doing the best job with the worst material he can have. So, yeah. Kudos to him.
That's what he's famous for. That's what he did in ECW.
I.e. ECW.
Well, the next week is going to go to another level, man. SmackDown 251, episode 251 on June 10th, 2004. Goes to another level because this show has the debut of Kenzo Suzuki. And
God bless you.
Thank you. Talk about the less said, the better, man.
Oh,
good Lord,
man.
What a disaster. I don't think we ever need to talk about that again. I don't know if he ever fights Undertaker on one of these shows, but yeesh.
Oh, I hope not.
I hope not, too.
I don't want to cover the horseshoe or the Suzuki.
God bless you. Well, the Undertaker, we see him backstage. He's just quietly contemplating the big decision he's going to have to make later tonight, the ultimatum that Heyman gave him, and... Then we get this weird scene from quote-unquote earlier today.
Yeah.
Travis, do you have any idea where Heyman and the Dudley Boys are?
Like, I don't know if they're at someone's home. They're at like a vacation rental at Verbo. I don't know.
An Airbnb in 2004.
Yeah, Airbnb.
Because it's not a hotel. Like they're,
no.
Because they're
at home.
Yeah. Like a basement bar. Down there, drinking scotch, toasting to the kidnapping that they, the felony that they just committed.
Yeah.
2 weeks
on
now
television.
It's been, that they've had Paul Bearer trapped. Maybe they're at Bubba's house or something. It's not really clear, but the Dudley Boys are in their vacation clothes, man. They're not in their camo, but they're in their Hawaiian shirts. And Paul Heyman is stressed out, though. He's not as happy as they are.
Excuse me. Do you know what you've done?
Yeah. We did exactly what you told us to do. We went out there, and we made an impact. We abducted Paul Bearer. Has it ever occurred to you to think why in 13 years of all the things The Undertaker has been through, no one's ever tested him that way? No one's ever done anything to Paul Bearer in 13 years? Why no one's ever tested The Undertaker that way? Has it ever occurred to you to think who Paul Bearer is? I mean, you probably have your own image of Paul Bearer, but who is Paul Bearer to The Undertaker? Because that's what's relevant. You see, to The Undertaker lives in one world. We live in another. And there's only one conduit, one median between those two worlds, Paul Bearer. There's only one man on the face of this planet that The Undertaker will seek advice from, Paul Bearer. There's only one man on the face of the planet The Undertaker trusts, Paul Bearer.
And the Dudley Boys kind of sober up and they kind of get serious about things. And they want to go with Paul Bearer with Heyman to the arena tonight, but... Heyman tells him to keep Bear tied up in the room, and he'll head to the arena by himself to see what Taker's answer is. And he grabs his big old duffel bag and walks out of the vacation home and heads to the arena.
Sleepover.
I guess so, man. Well, we get our main event talk segment with Heyman coming down to the ring and his leather overnight bag, and He tells us this huge moment is up ahead that's going to alter everyone's lives. Plans will be altered. Every WWE fan, employee, and superstar will change forever. Cannot turn the hyperbole up enough.
No. It's like when Cole said that was the biggest, what was that announcement, was the biggest in human history or whatever.
Yeah, Flair versus McMahon.
Yeah. Oh, man, this is, like, on par with that comment, you know? Like, it's going to change history itself.
Except I buy it when Paul Heyman's doing it. It's fine.
Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely.
We'll talk about hyperbole. Undertaker comes out and does, oh, my God, he does his full entrance, man. It's like, this is where it's starting to become a cliche, man, because yeah, it takes six minutes for him to get out to the ring for this promo. But it's great, though. I mean, the crowd loves it still.
Yeah.
Always. And when he's in the ring, Paul Heyman has revealed the contents of his duffel bag. It's the urn, of course. Taker is confused and conflicted at this, and we get this about 100 camera shots, quick cuts. I mean, this is Kevin Dunn to the extreme as we go. Paul Heyman's face, Undertaker's face, Heyman's face, Undertaker's face, Heyman's face, Undertaker's face. Oh, over and over and over and over and over, over again. As finally Undertaker reluctantly takes a knee, does the Shakespeare pose, and bows down to the power of the urn as Heyman just starts cackling gleefully as he has finally gotten control of the Undertaker. He has manipulated him into obeying him and joining up with him now that he's got Paul Bearer at his command and kidnapped. And this is the main event of this show. That's how the show goes off the air. This is 2 weeks in a row now that the show just goes off the air just with, like, a lot of confusion, mm-hmm. not, like, an exciting match. I hope these guys got a dark match or something after this, because this is a crappy way to end the show. But, you know, yet again, kudos to both these guys. Taker is acting impeccable here, too. It's the goofiest stuff ever, but they're selling it, man. They're giving it their all, and the crowd reacts to it. So kudos to them up to this point. It hasn't even gone off the rails yet.
Yeah, and then, like you said, they're doing a good job with what they're giving, because mm-hmm. even when Taker gets in the ring at the beginning of the segment, he takes his hat off. As soon as he takes it off and looks up, that's when you see Heyman holding the urn. Like, it's kind of, I think it's kind of cheesy, but it's really cool, like, the way they play that off. I don't know, it's really neat. Like, that's when his eyes notice that, oh, crap, Heyman has the urn, you know, because until that point, it hadn't been revealed yet, you know, to everybody. So it was kind of neat, you know, and like I said, Michael Bay is on the behind the camera, giving him the quick cut back and forth.
Give me like a seizure.
Porn film, dude. Yeah. It went on for a long time. But I'll tell you what, man, it is what it is, and that'll take us to next week, SmackDown 252. June 17th, 2004. Oh, boy. This show's going to kick off with a view of a cement mixer near the stage, and nobody knows why it's there. They've been there all day. Someone drove a cement mixer out. It's not Steve Austin driving a big piece of machinery. Nobody has any clue why it's there. I don't know why it's there. We'll get to it eventually, I guess. So, the Dudley's music hits, and they immediately come out for a WWE Tag Team title match, which somehow they've warranted that against Rico and Charlie Haas, who, you put something in your notes here about them.
My wife came in during this match, and she just had a lot of questions about this gimmick. Rico, Haas, Jackie Gaeta, just a lot of questions.
Well, did you answer? Could you fill us all in?
I'm not sure I gave the right answers.
Oh,
they're,
man,
like Roddy Piper. Just when you think you've got the answers,
yep,
Rico changed the question.
Oh, yeah, he does. So, well, believe it or not, Dudley Boys win here. And Bubba pins Rico with his feet on the ropes. And for a shoot here, Rico actually gets injured and is out for quite a while. Mm. So it's a good thing they did a tactile change. So,
yeah,
you can see him get hurt in this match. But anyway, Dudley celebrate, go up the ramp, and they're hugging on Paul Heyman, and they're now 18-time tag champs amongst the various tag team, or amongst the various organizations they've been with. So I guess between, what, ECW and WCW and WWE, they're 18-time tag champs. And that was back in 2004.
I mean, that's pretty wild and honestly impressive. And they're only going to add to that as they go to TNA and then come. Well, they never won them when they came back to WWE, shockingly. But, you know, they'll add some TNA title runs to that. Yeah. But, dude, I have to say, though, the Dudley Boys entrance had some of the most piped in fake heat I have ever heard in my life. Like, it was outright, like, the crowd did not care about the Dudley Boys, but this fake booze, I mean, it was like unbelievable.
Oh yeah, super canned heat, man. It was awful. It was ridiculous. But well, they're standing at the top of the rampway, and Heyman's on the mic getting some. He's actually getting heat, and he claims that his motivational skills led to them winning the tag titles. And Paul Bearer didn't get to witness his greatness because he's in protective custody, which I guess being locked in a closet is in protective custody. But he then shows a recap of Taker bowing to him last week and says that, you know, he controls Taker's conscience, which is Paul Bearer. So he controls the conscience of WWE. So he controls Paul Bearer. So he says the Undertaker will one day be loyal to him based on his greatness. And he says even the big dog needs to be trained. So he's arranged for the Undertaker to take on the Dudley Boys in a handicap match at the Great American Bash. So, Live Free or Die Hard, I think. Or no, Live Free or Die handicap match. That's a Bruce Willis movie, but yeah.
Live Free or Die? What does that have to do with the match?
Yeah, I don't know. I have no idea. So he promises that Taker's going to, quote-unquote, do the right thing at the Great American Bash.
Because at the Great American Bash, ladies and gentlemen, I promise you, the Undertaker will do the right thing. The Undertaker will do the right thing, or he'll find himself in a situation that for you is a must-see situation. I like to call it Live Free or Die.
He says at the Great American Bash, there will be a crypt with Paul Bearer in it. There will be a cement truck like the one right next to him. And at the Great American Bash, Taker will do the right thing, or Heyman will make the cement flow, and Bearer will find himself in a terrible situation. And as he says this...
Dead!
Yeah.
That would be the situation.
6 feet under. And as he's saying this, cement truck is filling this small casket with cement. And it is so underwhelming and so not impressive and not even... doesn't hold a candle to what the Corvette, you know, with the windows exploding, held, like, you know, back when Stone Cold did that, so...
Which it I think is. That's what they thought was going to be. Like, everyone remembers, like, the glass popping out of that Corvette and just being the coolest thing. And this is the complete opposite. This crowd is just dead silent as the cement just flops out of this wooden coffin.
And it's like an unimpressive coffin that wouldn't even fit Paul Bearer. It's like one that would fit, like, my 7-year-old. It's so tiny. You know, it's so small, but...
Well, Heyman says that. He goes on and he's just like, this is just a demonstration.
Yeah, he says, this is just a demo. You know, at the Great American Bash, I will have a 3-inch thick glass crypt built for the fans to see Paul Bearer, but no one's going to be able to break him out. So, and in a moment that seems like we literally just heard it, he again says the Taker will do the right thing, or he'll give notice to fill the crypt with cement. It'll stop at Paul Bearer's face, and he'll wait for Taker to do the right thing, or he'll give notice, and the crypt will fill with cement. If he doesn't, it's going to cover Paul Bearer's face, and he'll suffocate and be no more. And he says, tonight, Taker will be here and will bow down at his feet. So if any of you thought that I just repeated myself 14 times, it's because Paul Heyman repeated himself 14 times to kill so much time here and just... This is like a fart in church. It is not exciting. It's not cool. But I would like to call the authorities because this man is premeditating murder on national television and is telling the world about it.
We're getting a main event murder match at the Great American Bash, Travis.
Yeah, dude.
What is happening?
I don't know, man. What is the purpose here? Okay, so last week he was like, join me. We'll rule the galaxy. And now he's like, if you don't, I'm murdering your dad in front of you.
And he's having his two minions fight his new minion. Like, what purpose is he trying to accomplish by having his one team beat up his other guy, his big guy?
I don't know.
And Travis,
I have no idea.
Might I ask, what is the right thing?
I don't know.
Nobody
knows. We literally never find out what the right thing is. So, it doesn't make any sense. But a little bit later on.
Dude. Huh? The announcers are questioning, like, what is he even talking about? What is the right thing? What is this? Like, I mean, we can't put over enough how long this is and how quiet the crowd is through this. And like the fact that Paul Heyman has to spend 5 minutes explaining what this is, that's sign number one that this is crappy booking. Like if you have to explain this too much, it's like when you gotta, like, TNA is guilty, what used to be guilty of this all the time, of having these ridiculous stipulation matches where it's just like you couldn't understand the rules. Like the King of the Mountain match, it's like it's so overbooked, like so many steps you have to take to win that match. That's what this is, like going through all the measurements of the crypt and what's gonna happen. Like that's sign number one of bad booking, man. If you can't explain it just like that, what were they smoking?
I don't know if he was booking this crap or who was, but it doesn't make any sense. But it's not over yet, kids. On a side note, Horseshoe gets his debut.
God bless you.
Thank you. I'm murdering Funaki. And then before the main event here of this night of SmackDown, we get a graphics running down the Great American Bash card. Not a lot of matches booked, honestly. And we'll get there. It's official now. Taker is in a live free or die match against the Dudley Boys. So let's sign this one up right underneath the final curtain. Rest in peace, biker chain, blah, 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 all those. So,
Kurt Angle as general manager is, he's kind of fallen by his duties, man. He's let one of his managers be kidnapped for 3 weeks, and now he's just letting murder matches happen on his television show. I mean, it's not a great resume he's building up as a general manager.
It's true. But he is sending Tori Wilson out there to get you to buy the Great American Bash. So
it's a great segment. Just lights up a grill for no reason. It's fantastic. Yeah. She's got my vote, man.
Well, the main event's got nobody's vote. It's RVD and John Cena against Booker T and Rene Dupree in the main event. Mm. Oh, my goodness. 3 out of 4 of those are good. But anyway... Everything breaks down. They start brawling. The lights go out, and the bell tolls, gong hits, whatever you want to call it. And the lights actually come up, and Taker's actually in the ring with all four of the guys. So that was pretty cool to see him, you know, supernaturally appear there. And he goes and he goozles Booker, but then he lets him go, and he actually winds up giving John Cena the big boot. So, which is kind of strange because he's supposed to be a babyface. And he then punches his former hardcore title opponent, RVD, and beats him down in the corner and then winds up giving him a choke slam. And I will say this, man, the crowd is on their feet for this stuff, for Taker being out there.
Oh, yeah.
They're fired up. And Cena gets up and winds up getting a huge tombstone from the Undertaker. And then Taker's music hits and Paul Heyman comes out with the urn, holds it up, and Taker's like overlooking his destruction, his path he's made. And this is apparently Taker's demonstration of loyalty. Their commentary is kind of saying, like, is this what, you know, Heyman meant? And so he reluctantly takes a knee as the purple lights come on. And again, the show is closed in 3 weeks, I think, now with Undertaker in the main event.
Yeah, that's right.
Not Eddie Guerrero and JBL.
Speaking of John Bradshaw Layfield, man, like, I will say this about the Undertaker stuff. It's, I don't hate this idea of the storyline of, like, Paul Heyman trying to manipulate the Undertaker and trying to control him. Like, that's not a bad storyline in theory.
No,
like, when you add on the concrete crypt and trying to murder Paul Bearer is where it goes off the rails.
Yeah.
Everything else is actually kind of interesting.
Yeah.
What is not a good idea was on this episode of SmackDown. This was the first one after Bradshaw decided to goose step across the ring in Germany to get some cheap heat back in 2004 and do a Nazi salute. That really happened, ladies and gentlemen.
Yep.
And of course, the WWE does not hesitate to try and make it part of their storylines and like try to get heat from it. And dude, JBL's promo on the show, man, I don't know if you watched it, but his promo on Eddie Guerrero, it's like
it's straight out of this year.
He could be in Trump's cabinet, man. Some of the stuff he says out there, it's like, it's unreal, that character, man. Like,
oh,
how
yeah.
timely it is for 2019. It's something else.
Oh, yeah. This character would not fly nowadays. It hits too close to home, you know, honestly.
It might fly even better. I'm not sure anymore.
I don't think it's PC.
Exactly. That's the whole point.
Oh, man.
But, yeah, wow.
They'd get sued if this character's on TV nowadays.
Yeah, that's probably true. Well, let's take it home to the Great American Bash with the final SmackDown before that, episode 253, June 24th, 2004. And John Cena is going to open up the show. He's talking to his good friends Charlie Haas and Miss Jackie backstage as they try to warn him about taking on The Undertaker, calling him out tonight. And he does not heed their warning. He goes into the ring. He's cutting a promo about Undertaker. And again, we see the cement mixer out near the entrance of the arena. And he basically calls Undertaker out tonight. But Angle and Roman's dad, Mr. Reigns, come out. Actually, Angle, he's all cocky and arrogant, and he delivers a rap booking Cena in a match with Undertaker tonight. And it's actually way better than the raps he did last year. It's actually respectable. He books that match for the main event tonight. And later on, the announcers are continuing to wonder what the right thing is that Undertaker is supposed to do tonight, just like we are all wondering back at home.
Yeah.
We see Heyman backstage, of course, on his cell phone. Cell phone, but he's got his cell phone with him. He's got blueprints of the concrete crypt, which kind of gave me memories of Taker's blueprints of the caskets back in the day. And he's on the phone 4 days before this pay-per-view and this match where he's got all these plans, yelling at them because they don't understand the design of his concrete crypt. You'd think that he'd have that already straightened out by this point,
right?
4 days before the pay-per-view, but whatever. The Dudley Boys cut him off, and they're wondering, God, what are you talking about, Paul? What is the right thing? What is he supposed to do? And Paul tells Bubba to trust him, and Bubba, of course, scoffs at that because he used to work for Paul Heyman.
Yeah.
He's heard that before. In the middle of this, these guys get interrupted by Mordecai and Bob Holly brawling backstage like it's a 99 hardcore match. They just come in between them, fighting the arena, and they're just booking another random match for the Great American Bash card at this point to fill up the card. And then they, I think Mordecai at one point screams that he's going to crucify Hardcore Holly. So
yeah, he does.
Anyway,
yikes.
After that, Angle and Luther Reigns roll in, and Angle tells Heyman, he pulls Heyman off to the side and asks if they've got things clear for tonight, and if Taker's going to destroy John Cena, and Paul Heyman reassures him of that. We see Undertaker, again, he's backstage, just stoically walking around, contemplating things. That's a common thread we've seen the past few weeks. And we get that main event of Taker and Cena, a match we've seen a decent amount over these past couple years here on SmackDown. I've seen it a few times on SmackDown now, and this might be the best one between these two right here. It's the first one we've ever seen between the Dead Man and Cena, and it's a really long, good match. Goes through a commercial break, even.
Yeah, man, it is. I loved this match. Yeah. I really enjoyed it. It's because Taker's intense. He's not the American BA anymore. You know, he's an intense, you know, stoic Undertaker. And then Cena is showing so much intensity because it plays into the storyline where he got Tombstone disrespected last week. And he comes out. He's not happy-go-lucky Cena. He's intense Cena. The crowd is split, too. Dude, they helped make this match good, man. It is – man, this match is great. I wish this was a pay-per-view match.
It could have been, man. Yeah. And better than what we got. And it's kind of a cool what-if, too, because
– yeah.
We really don't ever see Undertaker as a heel again for the rest of his career. We've kind of seen the end of that with the big evil Booger Red character ending back a couple years ago. But it just kind of makes you think, could they have done some more heelish stuff with the returning Dead Man character? Because he's definitely leaning into that during this match. He ends up cheating to win, getting Taker's Cena's chain, trying to use that. Punches Cena with it, tosses out of the ring, and then gets the Tombstone for the win. So he's doing some heelish stuff. And he was a great heel back in the day when he's done heel stuff. I mean, he can do either character great, but just kind of makes you think, makes you wonder what could have been had they done anything like that during this time. And maybe they were thinking about that or teasing that or wondering that. But once again, for like the fourth week in a row now, the show's going to end. The crowd going home unhappy with Taker kneeling down to Paul Heyman. And the crowd wondering if he will do the right thing at the Great American Bash 2004.
Oh, man. You know what's not the right thing? Watching this pay-per-view.
Never in any scenario.
I can recommend two thumbs straight down. If I have more thumbs, I put them down. Do not, under any circumstances, click play on the WWE Network on the Great American Bash 2004.
Let's run through this card real quick.
All right. Real quick.
We get an unannounced match with Charlie Haas and Luther Reigns in the middle of things. Kenzo Suzuki versus Billy Gunn in a match people paid $35 to have to watch. Sable versus Torrie Wilson. Things are trending up. Mordecai versus Hardcore Holly, as previously mentioned. JBL winning the WWE Championship in the absolute cheapest of fashions.
Yeah.
And then that's back-to-back with this horrendous main event. Like, you talk about killing a town, dude. Man, what fan could have possibly gone home happy from this pay-per-view?
Dude, some people want to say that December Dismember is the worst. I loved it. I was there. We were there. We'll talk about it. It was nostalgic for me. This is the dirt worst pay-per-view that WWE has ever produced, man. I really think so. This is worse than some of those other split ones they had a few years ago that people said they were watered down and bad. This is awful.
It's got to be in the top 10, man. Like, you've got Rey Mysterio and Chavo kind of saving things in the middle of the show.
Yeah.
And then the U.S. title match is okay at the beginning. I mean, and JBL and Guerrero is fine. Like, the ending of it is the worst. But, like, the match itself is fine. But, dude, just running through that car, that is garbage, man.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this is so weak.
It's so bad, man. But, well, let's talk about it here. It's June 27th, 04, from the Norfolk Scope in Norfolk, Virginia, which is, again, not well received online or apparently backstage. If you read some of the dirt sheet style, they say that, you know, we're not happy with this backstage. So, anyway, I've seen the main event of the show, which was this. I mean, the end of this match. I've seen the JBL match, too. At least the end of it,
yeah.
I know I've seen. But that's all I've ever seen from this pay-per-view, so I never watched the rest. I watched most of it for this actual show because I want to see how bad it was. But I do think it was cool that WWE was bringing back WCW pay-per-view titles. That was something that for 3 years I've been like, why don't they use them? Because I think WCW had some cool titles for the pay-per-views, you know, and I'm glad they brought this one back. But they had, what, two or three of these, and they never did them again, probably because they had such a bad taste in their mouth from them.
Well, they booked a WCW card for this pay-per-view. I think that's the problem, man. Like a 2000 WCW card. That's what this seems like. But I do remember, I have seen this one before. I rented it back in the day. I think I've said before, I didn't have cable during this time.
Right.
So I was kind of craved for any kind of wrestling I could get that was new. So I rented this one also probably because of the DVD cover with Torrie Wilson on the cover. And then the Divas host the show. I mean, Dawn Marie, good for Nunzio, man. He gets a little reward after getting tombstoned all these weeks. He gets to walk off with Dawn Marie after showing him his 15 inches of his shoe.
Who's he talking to? Rene Dupree.
Rene Dupree.
He has little tiny feet.
He
legitimately has tiny feet.
He really
did. Like, he's small, like a size 9 or something. So tiny.
Good for Nunzio.
Yeah, Nunzio, man. But, this happens.
Yep,
this really happens,
it does.
So.
You got the patriotic theme, of course. The opening video is these creepy kids reciting the Pledge of Allegiance. And they're talking about the big three matches for tonight. And they talk about Taker's being freedom of choice, tying in with this American stuff. And it's a cool set with all the flags and everything. And then, of course, the big giant cement mixer is right there front and center in the entryway all night long.
Yeah. I do like they have the red, white, and blue ropes, man. It was pretty cool. The set's great. Yeah, I just wish they'd do more WCW titles, man. Like Halloween Havoc, a proper Starrcade, like not just a network special, an actual Starrcade show. Why don't Spring Stampede, any of those, man, they'd be great titles instead of doing Balls of Fire and
Road Wild.
No, I'm saying instead of the stupid names WWE does nowadays, like Great Balls of Fire and Stomping Grounds and Super Showdown, and then
Greed.
4 months later do another Super Showdown.
Sin.
So, yeah, I don't do any of those. It's fine. I'll take that over Balls of Fire.
No, you're absolutely right, man. WCW had some classics.
Yeah.
I'd love to see a Halloween Havoc show. That'd be sweet.
It'd be great with the big old blow-up gargoyle. You know they have that still somewhere.
Slim Jim things on the ring post.
stuff. Little tombstones there with everybody's name on it.
That awesome. Would be pretty awesome.
Taker yeah. could be front and center for that.
Oh, yeah.
It would be great. So.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, cool set, like you said, man. But anyway, backstage, we're going to see Heyman and Bearer talking, like two of the greatest managers of all time.
Oh, man. Like, yeah. What a shame we didn't get more of this.
I know. Them interacting.
God,
it'd be great, man.
Dude, I would have loved it.
Oh, yeah. Well, Paul Bearer is bound and gagged.
Oh.
Yep, he is. Just sitting there, gagging his mouth. Paul Heyman says, you know, everybody thinks I'm lying. The Dudleys think I'm lying. The authorities. So I guess someone has alerted the authorities that this is premeditated murder is going to happen here. But
well, then actually, it kind of gives an explanation to things. Because Heyman says... He think all the authorities think I'm bluffing, that I'm not really yeah. going to do this to you. So it actually somehow kind of gives an explanation as to why we're being allowed to witness this murder tonight. It's pretty flimsy, but at least it's something.
Sure. Yeah, it is something, though. You're right. So, and Heyman threatens to pull the lever and fill the crypt with concrete. And then he removes the gag and says he'll hear Bear scream as he pulls the lever again and again, and he suffocates under it. And he says tonight Taker will do the right thing.
I'm sure the Undertaker's gonna do the right thing. Aren't you? I mean, the past 3 weeks, that's what he's done. The Undertaker's made the conscious decision to do the right thing. And tonight, against the Dudley boys, for your sake, I'm sure the Undertaker will do the right thing. Then again, even if the Undertaker makes a decision to do the right thing tonight, who's to say I'll do the right thing?
And yeah, we see Bear kind of like not really making too many noises at him, but I don't know.
He does manage to scream out to him, and
yeah,
he's doing his facials and everything. And
yeah,
he's acting. He's the man, of course.
Yeah, he's doing the best he can with this crap too, just like everybody else is. So, but and I will say that he looks nice, man. At least Paul Heyman put him in a suit and tie. So pulled him out of his closet, put him in a suit and tie to bury him in.
Oh, so. That's disturbing. Later on, we got the Undertaker for like the third week in a row now. He's just roaming the hallway backstage. Instead of trying to find out where his conscience is and trying to save him and rescue him, he's just chilling out in the Bowery of the arena.
Yep.
Looking for Raven, I guess. But anyway, we get this is, yes, of course, the main event. Unfortunately, this is how Taker gets back to the main event, is this garbage. And we get the long drawn out video package of everything leading up to this, and we get to hear Paul Heyman uttering those four words, do the right thing, about 27 more times in this video package as well.
Yeah, he does, man. Which again, nobody knows what that means except Spike Lee. It's a 1989 film he had, so I think it won an Oscar.
It was nominated for some
nominated,
stuff.
Maybe, yeah. But anyway, we got Cole and Taz on commentary. We're gonna see Paul Bearer is strapped into the glass crypt there. According to Michael Cole, it is a 4 foot by 4 foot by 8 feet. So, thank you, Michael Cole. Always good for useless dimensions that don't hold a hill of beans.
Always. So, it's his signature.
Yeah, he's perfect at that. So,
Paul Bearer just looks like he's sitting in a dunk tank, like on the side of the thing. Just, poor guy, man.
Oh, man.
Looks so silly.
How is that a crypt? It's a glass box. You don't bury people in a glass box. It's a glass case of emotions, what it is.
That's exactly what it is. Glass case of emotion match.
Exactly.
That would have been better. Well, the Dudley boys are out first for the Live Free or Die Hard match. And Heyman is out with them. He's got the urn, but Heyman stands back by the cement mixer and by Bear over in the corner of the arena, while the Dudley boys go out and make their entrance. And Undertaker, of course, out second with the big entrance. He's got a bunch of torches lighting the way to him at the ring, too. And he gives a bit of a stare down towards Heyman as he's walking towards that part of the arena. And Heyman was gloating earlier, but he kind of cowers a bit back at Undertaker's entrance, but then he just smiles and raises that urn back at him, staring him down.
Oh, yeah, he does. And, you know, it's really cool production there. I really do. They just, we can't overstate that either, how much money they put in this production. Lots and lots of smoke, though. They overdid it with the smoke this time. It is everywhere. But like you said, Heyman's holding the urn up, and commentary's discussing how Heyman has, he's had control over Taker in recent weeks. And Michael Cole says, this has got to be the most difficult night in Undertaker's life. Which I just wanted to say, how about the night his parents burned? And then he found out that maybe his brother did it. Or that Paul Bearer was downstairs sleeping with his mom. Any of those things could have been worse. But no, watching his fat father-in-law, or father, pseudo-father, getting buried in oatmeal is going to be the worst night of his life.
So. The guy who slept with his mom, yeah.
Right, exactly.
Maybe that explains all this. It's just revenge from spreading your legs from New York to California or whatever.
Yeah. Back in California, feeling Minnesota.
Slipping her the stuff in the turkey or whatever.
Oh, man, yeah. Something like that. That was terrible.
Anyway.
Cole and Taz were like, you know, perhaps the only two people that know what do the right thing are Undertaker and Paul Heyman. So what a stupid thing to put. Like, we have no context for what that means. There's no clue. We talk about how Vince is like the king of unsubtlety, but like I could have used something here to like help me out, like give me some kind of crumb of logic to help me figure out what do the right thing means. Man, there's nothing, and it's just going to go out the window as the match progresses and ends. So.
Dude, you know, 20 years later, we're still making fun of WCW for doing Judy Bagwell on a pole. Brother, put this right next to it, if not above it. Paul Bearer in a concrete crypt. Like, this is just as laughably bad. And this is the friggin' main event of a pay-per-view, man. Like, you cannot defend this.
Yeah, Judy Bagwell on a forklift was not a main event. This isn't main event.
Yes.
And your main event heels are the tag team champions, you know?
Yeah, that's another thing. Like, there's so much garbage to dig through on this. Like, I think you and I both love and respect the Dudley Boys, right?
Absolutely. Phenomenal.
Absolutely. Deserved Hall of Famers. But especially during this time, man, there's just something that's just seems, during this run, just played out, man. It's just like, it doesn't click anymore. Like, I think we said, I don't know if we said on the podcast last week or if we were just talking, but like, if you look back at Dudley's, Hardy's, and Edge and Christian, even at this time, the Hardys and Edge and Christian had all gone off in different directions. All those guys had all reinvented their careers already at this point, and they would continue to do so many more times over in the years to come.
Mm-hmm.
The Dudley Boys are still the Dudley Boys at this point. And, like, I respect, you know, I'm all for a tag team staying together, but they're, like, wearing the same outfits, doing the same stuff. Like,
same spots.
It doesn't click, man, being in the main event.
Yeah, it doesn't. This is about 3 years too late, honestly. They were a main event attraction in 99, 2000, 2001.
Yeah.
And they did main event stuff back then.
Sure.
Main event
we
Raw.
We talked about that. Yeah.
How cool that was. But yeah, it's just a couple years too late, man. But, oh, man. Anyway, we're just stalling and not getting this match. So let's go. Let's just dive in.
Well, there's going to be a lot of stalling here, too. This is
definitely
more of an angle than a match in a lot of ways. Because Heyman is going to get on the mic before the match even begins. And he asks Taker if he has decided to do the right thing tonight.
Before this match begins, I just want to make sure that tonight you have decided to do the right thing. And just in case it crosses your mind not to do the right thing, this is just a mere demonstration of what will happen to Paul Bearer.
Whoa, wait a minute. What the hell is Heyman doing? You got to be kidding me. Paul Bearer strapped to that chair inside that glass crypt.
What is the deal here?
Well, he's pouring cement into that crypt. Undertaker glancing at his confidant, his associate, as that cement begins to creep, begins to ooze, begins to encase the ankles and the feet of Paul Bearer.
It's up to Paul Bearer's shins, and the match didn't even start yet.
And pulls this giant cartoonish lever on the side of a cement truck, and the cement starts pouring into the crypt and fills up about to Bear's ankles in there as Paul Heyman is screaming at Undertaker.
Yeah, so we got it's ankle deep in cement, and then Bubba is going to get on the mic and tells Taker to prove to the world that he's with him, you know, prove that you're with us, do the right thing, and lay down, he says. The bell rings, Taker looks at Paul Heyman, and he's kind of hesitant, and again, I want to say he's doing a good job with this crap he's been served.
Yes.
You know, he's acting it well, he's showing hesitation, like he's not really sure what to do, he's showing the conflict, you can see the conflict on his face, you know, you really can, which is important, you know, to be theatrical like that with this crap he's given, but anyway... Bubba yells at him again, says, lay down, lay down. And Taker winds up taking a knee. He lays down in the middle of the ring, and Bubba makes a huge error and stands over him, gets in his face, and Taker's had enough, and he just goozles him, reaches up, grabs him by the throat, and this pops the crowd. Before that, they were dead silent. So,
yeah, Bubba stands over him and yells at Taker on the mic, I've been waiting for this moment for my entire life. Which, yeah. I guess Bubba is only like 14 years old, because his entire life he's been waiting to beat The Undertaker. What? What are you talking about, man?
Yeah. Oh, man, hit puberty real early.
But the crowd loves it, like you said, and they pop big for it. D-Von tries to go for the save, but Taker chokes him too, and Paul Heyman does not love it. He gets on the mic and starts screaming again that this isn't the right thing, that's not doing the right thing, but the Dudley boys take over, and Undertaker cleans house on him. They start fighting to the outside. Undertaker bashes him into the tables, gets D-Von back in the ring, and goes for old school, but Heyman starts screaming at Undertaker again.
Bad dog, bad dog, bad dog, bad dog, bad dog, bad dog. He's just yelling bad dog. Which, again, oh, man, it's just so – it's like a farce of a wrestling show at this point. Like, it's like a parody. It's like Christopher Guest's wrestling show right now. So it's terrible, man. But at this point, yeah, we see Bear, he's now up to his waist in cement, and he's cursing at Paul Heyman because Paul Heyman has pulled the lever again. So, and then he says, you know, old school is not what I call doing the right thing. Don't test me again. And Bubba's going to attack Taker from behind, crotches him on the ring post. And they're putting the boots to him. And now they made a huge deal at the beginning of the match about how it was a tag team handicap match. But then it's all been 2-on-1. And now they're tagging again. And it's just like, dude, like we say so much, just follow your own rules, man. There's... Like, if you're going to lay rules out, let's follow them.
There's no rules here. There's no semblance of them. It's because... They're fighting around the ring doing stuff. There's no countouts, but then at one point Taker does a low blow behind, or Bubba does a low blow behind the ref's back or something, and it's just like, why are we even caring about disqualifications and stuff like that? It's
dude's about to choke on cement.
But man, we gotta praise Paul Bearer here, because he's going out with a bang as they cut back to him, and he's mic'd up in the crypt going, damn you, Paul Heyman, the Undertaker will save me, nothing bad will happen to me, my Undertaker will save me.
Right into that crypt, that cement now beginning to engulf at the calves.
The Undertaker will save me.
The legs of Paul Bearer, and you hear Paul Bearer pleading.
He's cracking me up this whole time. He's like got the biggest smile on his face. I know my Undertaker will save me.
Oh, man. He's gold, man. I'm going to miss him. For a while. So, oh, man. Yeah, this happens still. D-Von's working over Taker. Taker's fighting back, getting a back body drop and a sidewalk slam. And then Taker takes a page out of Kane's book and does like a – grabs the top rope and does like the backflip out of the ring just like Kane does and starts walking up toward Heyman. And then Paul Heyman says, you know, he barks at him and says, if you make one more move, I'll pull the lever again. And so Bubba attacks from behind, which pushes Taker forward, which means he made one more move.
He
so.
Did.
Yeah.
What a heel.
Yeah.
So the cement starts filling up the crypt even more as – Paul Bearer is just taunting Heyman the whole time, saying, you wish you had a relationship like me and my Undertaker. The cement gets up to Bear's shoulders, but Bubba actually goes and stops the lever from killing Paul Bearer. He grows a conscience during this time or something.
I don't understand the logic there. Wasn't that the whole point? I don't get it.
Well, he yells at Heyman. He says, "Let us finish off Undertaker. Let us do the job, and then you can have your way with Bearer." And Heyman tells him, "Go finish training the dog." He's really trying to get that metaphor
right. In there. But wait, wasn't the whole point to get Taker on their side?
Exactly.
But why do they want to get a W over him here? They want to get the win. Then they think that they can murder Paul Bearer, and then he's going to team with them? Like,
right.
That just doesn't make sense.
This whole plan is not very well thought out, clearly. But, that's what we got to deal with here, man.
Yeah. Well, they throw Taker in the steps, and then Devon gets a rear choke on him in the ring, and Taker's firing back with flurry punches, hits a flying elbow from Devon. Bubba tags in there, using some tag team action here, suplexing him, and then we see the Crypt Cam. The debut of the Crypt Cam here. We see Paul Bearer calmly sitting in the cement, just sitting there. And Taz says, "That cement is cold and heavy. I used to work in cement. I guess in his past life, he used to work in cement or construction. I don't know. He doesn't really expand upon it, but he says it went cold and heavy. Like, I know that. I've been there. So, whatever."
Dude. King would have loved the Crypt Cam. It would have been his favorite part of the match.
King,
he was on commentary. Yeah.
Yeah.
The coffin cam, cam, the corner cam.
Yeah. Hey, love that.
Crypt Cam, JR.
Yeah. Look at that.
Yeah, the Dudley boys are working over Taker with this. They get some, they get the old 3DB, the rare tag team move. You don't see as much in there, but Undertaker, he's fighting back and. This match just kind of grinds to a halt. You could have cut 5 or 10 minutes out of this stuff here. They're just like kind of looking for things to do with Taker, choking him out. Everything just kind of grinds to a halt here. Bubba ends up going for a sleeper, but Taker suplexes out of him. Paul Bearer is just kind of swimming around in the oatmeal in the crypt or whatever. Undertaker starts hitting his moves of doom, gets the snake eyes, the big boot, punches down Devon, hits the old Hogan leg drop. Bubba makes the save. Taker works him over. Taker hits stinger splashes on both the Dudleys in the corners, hits old school on Bubba, and then goes for a tombstone on Devon, but Devon slips out, and that's where he hits the Death Valley blow as the referee's back is turned.
Yep, and then Dudley's going to capitalize with that 3DB, that reverse 3D move they have. And then, at this point, Paul Heyman and the Urn come down to the ring. So he's had enough standing up there, and he comes down to the ring. And as he does, Taker sits up, and his eyes lock onto Heyman's. And Heyman holds the Urn up, trying to show his power over the Undertaker. And Taker turns around and chokeslams Bubba, tombstones Devon, and then hits the old classic arms cross pose and gets the win at 14 minutes and 42 seconds. Just out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere.
He took a 3DB, sits up, choke slams, tombstones him, and then gets the pinfall.
Yep. As Cole mentions,
Cole says, yeah, go ahead.
That was not the right thing. None of this was. But rare production slip up, I think. When Heyman comes down to the ring and he's staring at Undertaker, they shoot Heyman from behind. You can actually see the little IFB in-ear monitor that Heyman's got. And he's got the cord going out from his ear down. Like he's being fed instructions for this match, which is that's normal for the referees, and you just kind of you don't think much of it when the referees have it. But why does one of the characters in the show have one of those in his ear? It's like we shouldn't see that, and it's just like as if everything else didn't take you out of the reality of all this crap. It's just like, man, come on, we don't need to see that. Come on.
Yeah,
sloppy.
You're right, man, you're right. Well, so Taker's won, and then again, like you said, this is more of an angle than a match anyway, so it's 14 minute 42 second angle. We're still not over. So Taker stares Paul Heyman down, who's now run up against to the truck. Heyman gets on the microphone and repeats the same stupid line, about do the right thing. He says, since you won't do it and you didn't do it, I'm going to do the right thing. He walks over to the lever to pull it, but a lightning bolt strikes the lever.
Why didn't Taker do that in the first place?
I know. from Jump Street, he should have just lightning bolted the lever and then just saved his buddy. I don't get it. Oh, man.
Well, Heyman stumbles and falls to the ground. He starts screaming in fear. He's selling it great. He's doing a great job with it. As Taker makes his way to the crypt, and Paul Bearer is just giddy and smiling as he begs,
"Save me!"
begging him to finally save him. It's so my heart is breaking this whole time.
Oh yeah, you know it's coming.
Oh man, it's devastating. Taker walks over to him. And he gets down on one knee and bows down and does the pose to Paul Bearer as his music hits and the crowd is celebrating. Undertaker's going to save Paul Bearer, of course, but Undertaker kind of hesitantly looks at the cement truck and looks back at Bearer. And Bearer's again screaming, "You're the only one who can save me!" And Taker gets on the mic and stands up and tells Paul,
"You can do it! You're the only one that can do it! Save my life, Undertaker!"
"Paul, I have no other choice. Rest in peace."
Oh my God.
No! Undertaker!
No!
What are you doing? What the hell is he doing?
Do that! What? No!
The cement! Undertaker
no!
pulled the lever!
Undertaker!
What are you doing?
And then the Undertaker pulls the lever, and Paul Bearer does his best Darth Vader from Revenge of the Sith. He's, "No!" And Undertaker hangs his head and walks away. And we didn't see a close-up of cement covering up an obvious body double, but so the camera angle is different. It's a body double in a scene that was allegedly shot earlier on in the day. So Paul Bearer's dead. I don't know what the point of the entire build-up of the match was if they're going to murder Paul Bearer anyway.
Like, yes.
Vince Russo wasn't there for this swerve. He didn't write this. This is awful. It's bad writing. It's bad execution. I give props to the guys in the match because they did the best with what they were given. But this is so dumb. And like you said last week, we try to be positive, but I can't. I can't.
The pay-per-view goes off the air with the announcers, the viewers, and the crowd in the arena in just absolute stunned silence. Man, it is...
Yes.
You would just get a close-up on the crypt filled with cement, and everyone just going, "WTF, like, what was that? Why did that happen? Why did we just witness a murder of the beloved Paul Bearer right before our eyes? What is going on, man?"
Like, there had been no dissension amongst them, no reason for any of this, like... I don't know, man. There's just other... If you want to write him off TV because he's too fat in real life, like, there's other ways to do it instead of burying him in oatmeal, you know? They could have done anything. Or, like, he could have manipulated Taker again. Like
yes.
he did back in 97, yes. 98, 96.
Something like that.
You know? He could have been pulling the strings, and Taker could have done something to him. We didn't have to have Paul Heyman doing it, you know? So... I don't know, man. It's just rough, especially with such an iconic character that we know and love with Paul Bearer. To see him go out like this is just, it's bad.
It's indefensible, man. And like you said, you know, if they need to write off Paul Bearer, which is allegedly what all this was for, because Paul Bearer was just not in the best health and couldn't do, you know, the weekly travel and all that sort of stuff. Like, understandable, of course. And, you know, I'm down with doing some storyline to get him off TV. And I could even get behind this idea of Paul Bearer weighing Taker down, no pun intended, but Taker having to do like a "I'm sorry, I love you," like Shawn Michaels, Ric Flair,
sure.
Him having to be the one to take Paul Bearer out, but
yes.
Murdering him in a concrete crypt is just, that's a bridge too far, man. Put him in a casket, put him down a manhole again, but... Don't just murder him on television. Give me a break, man.
Should have gone back to his house where his parents died and push him in a burning fire there or something. Whatever, that would have been fine.
He broke into his house and they all legit got injured when he fought, before King of the Ring. Like all three of them hurt themselves brawling in the living room.
Oh man,
this is not even like so bad it's good stuff. This is just like don't ever do the right thing and don't ever watch this match.
Exactly. Do yourselves a favor. You're welcome for us watching this. And no, do it. Don't do it.
If you can get like a super cut of Paul Bearer in the crypt screaming, like watch that.
You'll be all right.
That's all you need. Don't watch anything else.
Well, I'm not satisfied with this ending. I'm not satisfied with what's going on. So I did a little digging. I don't normally do this, but we try to do our research here. I don't normally look at Wrestling Observer because as I get older, I believe less and less of what Dave Meltzer says.
Right.
Especially now that AEW is out, he's kind of in their back pocket. But anyway, I digress. But I did research his Observer, Wrestling Observer, that came out after this pay-per-view, and he did talk a little bit about Taker because, again, we talk about The Undertaker and his character here, and I don't know if we'll hit this over the next episode. So I just want to mention that he says in the Observer that there's talk of putting Undertaker with Heyman as a full-fledged top heel now. So he said that it seems like the most logical direction now that he's murdered is, you know, his dad here, but
that's another thing, man. Like what a heel.
Yeah.
Like this is your top baby face in the company. I mean, he's above Eddie Guerrero, I would say at this point. He's been the main event deal. Like how are we supposed to react to that? What are we supposed to think of him murdering his best friend? Like,
Even
how they explain it away the next few weeks, it's just like, okay, like, how do we cheer for that?
Yeah. Well, that's kind of what. Yeah, it's kind of Meltzer says here. He says, you know, Vince wants Undertaker to be kind of like a tweener who could work with anybody, but he figures the fans are going to keep him babyface just because of his legacy. But, you know, it takes a lot of work to get him to boo him. But he says that SmackDown is weak on star power, and he's the biggest star there, so it's hard to make him a heel. But anyway, they're lacking star power. We touched on that last week, you know, especially on the main event side. But so in my opinion, I don't see why you would turn your biggest babyface heel. It doesn't make any sense, you know. Why would you crowd up the heel scene with Taker now and JBL and the Dudleys and Rene Dupree and Kenzo Suzuki and Mordecai? Like, you don't need Undertaker as a heel. But and then to just top it all off, he does say that Paul Bearer was not actually in the crypt. They had a look-alike. The close-up shots were filmed earlier in the day. When Heyman pulled the lever, it was some like pre-tape. You went to the pre-tape, but anyway, and so the guy in the crypt was buried underneath the cement for a few seconds before they actually opened it and the cement poured open in the arena. So I'd be interested to, you know, always say if you were there, if you guys were there for this, we'd like to see, like to hear from you about just what you witnessed. You know, did you witness the guy switching out with Paul Bearer? What happened? You know, like, we want to know how this actually works. So, because they don't reveal all their secrets, but maybe Bruce Pritchard will tell about it one day. So,
yeah, and actually, there is a, I mean, you don't see that part of the special effects, but when I was Googling some stuff for this, there's actually a video on YouTube. I don't know where in the world they got this footage from, but there's some rehearsal footage of Undertaker practicing his speech and pulling the lever and getting the camera right for that, which is pretty interesting to see. And we'll post that up on our social media this week so you can go back and find it or look it up there on @TalkingTaker, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. So you see a little bit of the magic behind the scenes, but it is, you know, it's like there with the Buried Alive stuff. It would be interesting to hear the secrets behind some of this magic.
The Tales from the Crypt, if you will.
I absolutely will, my friend. I absolutely will.
I'd rather watch that than this match again.
All day, every day. And I don't even like... Well,
the crypt.
I don't know. I've never seen it as an adult. Like, as a kid, I didn't watch it because it was scary to me. But
yeah,
I don't know.
I agree.
I think Randy Turco's a big fan. He's a big horror fan. So he probably would unfollow us if I said I wasn't a fan of Tales from the Crypt. But I don't know. I might be as an adult.
I liked it as a kid.
Yeah, there you go. Well, we want to hear from you about your opinions on Tales from the Crypt and about this match, of course. So hit us up. I just said it at Talking Taker, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We love hearing from you and talking with you. We got a lot of good feedback about this episode when we asked for your thoughts on this match. Evan at EvanJohn97 on Twitter said, Really unfortunate that Paul was gone for 6 years after this. He got to be Undertaker's manager for just two more matches in October of 2010, and it's sad that him and Taker didn't get the chance to be at one last Mania. And I think we would both second all of those comments as well. Mm-hmm. The Downturn podcast at Downturn The said, "I like them, but why are the Dudleys in a main event?"
Which, thank you.
Yeah, we said all that as well. James at WAPW_wrestling just shared the perfect Krusty the Clown. What the hell was that gif? Just in response to that match. That's exactly what I needed for this. At Wrestling Disasters, Wrestling Disasters, they're at The Fans Podcast. They said, "Wondering why the Concrete Crypt didn't get its own pay-per-view. You got TLC, Hell in a Cell, Elimination Chamber. Why not Concrete Crypt?"
WWE Network for WWE Concrete Crypt.
Honestly.
Free or die, 2-on-1 handicap night.
Why not? Why not? But speaking of Wrestling Disasters, we enjoyed being on his podcast. Last week it came out before we had a chance to plug it, but hey, dude, we might have to do another one talking about this disaster.
Yeah,
we gave our comments on Taker versus Giant Gonzalez from WrestleMania 9. He's going through some of the worst matches in wrestling history, so go check them out on wherever you get your podcasts from, our latest episode, and go back through some of the other ones. Appreciate him having us on. And then Travis, there's always one, man. We actually got somebody at MmonDragon961 said, let me clear my glasses off here. "I remember this pay-per-view. It was great. The build to this match was great. The story was great. Even the match itself was good."
I'm sorry. We're not talking about Green Ranger match 1990. We're talking about 2004. We covered 1990 on here already, but
we did.
Sting and Flair in the main event. That was great. That was good storytelling. That was awesome. He said that this one was good, He said this one was good, and he liked the story. That's amazing. I love that.
I did too. I pressed him on it. He said, "Man, heel Dudleys and Paul Lee were great at this time." And Paul Lee was for sure. But
Paul Lee was.
Yeah, man, own it, dude.
Absolutely.
We don't have to have everybody agree with us on all this, and that's why Undertaker's so great, is because people see different stuff in it and agree and disagree, and we love the conversation. So we appreciate that. Shout out to at Germinator 1978, Jeremy DeLeon, who's trying to get us booked for StarCast on Twitter. Hey, man, I'm free that
weekend.
I'll go. Yeah.
Yeah. I can be free that weekend. Sure. I have a couple plans, but I'll cancel all of them.
Absolutely. Shout out to Hollywood Demon Dave on YouTube. Commented on our YouTube post, said, "Hollywood in the house." He said he's here for the Phenom talk. So we appreciate that, man. Don't forget, you can hear us on all the different podcasting services, including YouTube, Podbean, Spotify, Apple, Google Play, and we're on iHeartRadio podcast now, which is supposedly the biggest podcasting service in the world. So go check us out if that's how you listen to your podcast, man. Hit us up. Let us know if there's any other service you use that we need to get on and make it easier for you to listen to. We'll do our best to get on there.
I'd like to pose a question to, what was his name?
MmonDragon. I don't know if I'm saying that right. MmonDragon.
I'd like to know, what is your wrestling pay-per-view?
Is it ECW December to Dismember 2006?
No. Seriously, though, I want to know what your favorite pay-per-view is.
Yeah.
Let us know.
I can...
Oh, man. Anyway.
And, we'll keep this train, this hearse rolling on to the last ride next week as... things will get better, man. I know it's hard to believe because we're talking SummerSlam 04, Undertaker versus JBL. Somehow JBL is going to be better than this, man, because there's some fun stuff in the next few weeks, including the debut of a very important character in the Undertaker history. So I'm excited to talk about that.
There you go. All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, like you said, if you were there at the Norfolk Scope on this night, please let us know. Let us know what it was like to see this atrocity in live and living color. Did you get oatmeal on you from the cement or whatever? But who knows? Whatever. Anyway, I got nothing else to say about this. Bye-bye, Paul Bearer. We're sorry to see you go.
Tell me a lie.
Bye-bye, love. Bye-bye, happiness. But anyway, yeah, if you were there, let us know. We'll look forward to seeing you next week. Ladies and gentlemen, take her easy.
No. That's exactly what I don't want. I don't want a safety latch on this. Don't you understand? I want you to build me a monstrosity, a concrete crypt that no man can bust out of and no man can bust into. I want you to build me something along the lines of this blueprint that people will either see this Sunday,
come on,
or they will regret missing for the rest of their lives. I'm telling you, I want something so spectacular with 3-inch thick glass so everything that goes on inside can be viewed from all directions. And I want my concrete crypt delivered to the Scope in Norfolk this Sunday. No. Thank you. What can I do for you, gentlemen?
Well, cut the crap. We got a match in 3 days against The Undertaker at the Great American Bash. We want to know what you got planned.
Look, you said The Undertaker would do the right thing, or else. Paul, what is the right thing?
The Undertaker will do the right thing this Sunday because I am in control of The Undertaker. You guys have nothing to worry about. Hey, Bubba, trust me.
Trust you?
Yes.
Where have I heard that before?